cliffcentral.com.
David Hertz is the chairman of Worksmans, which is one of the big law firms in South Africa. They do incredible work. In particular, he's interested in certain areas that we'll get into in a moment, financial services regulation, mining and resources, Africa, which is fascinating, and infrastructure and energy. He was the head of litigation there for a long time and dispute resolution. He's someone who has a lot of personality, which I jokingly said to him at the beginning of our conversation was something that not all lawyers have. And that's kind of where we got started talking. And you said to me, I thought this was quite interesting, David. You said that actually the lawyers who have the personality are the lawyers that everybody does talk about. They're the ones who change things. They're the ones who help set precedent, who have the swagger and the means to make an impact in the legal fraternity and outside of it, to the degree that they actually end up being larger than life. I suppose that's true for very few, though, huh?
A sad truth. It's a nice place to start. As I was saying earlier, I can think of lawyers who defined the profession when I was young and growing up. And I have little doubt that the number has dropped dramatically. And I think it's a sadness because going to see an attorney is a challenging experience. It is one often, if it's a first time, where people are terrified.
It's intimidating.
Absolutely. And particularly if you're going to these large buildings, it makes it more and more difficult. It's something I'm going to get to just to indicate how we've tried to change that. I'm so proud of where we've just moved to, and it's a topic I'd like you to chat to me about.
Sure. I was there last year in, I think, November. You just moved in.
Correct. We moved beginning of December, but let's finish this theme. The reality is that I remember the people that were the colorful characters. The truth is that every major law firm, and in fact many others, deliver a quality service.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that therefore that's a given. It's like going to a doctor. You want to go to somebody who is quality. You run a business. You have to run it at a level. We all do that. So ultimately, I believe that any business and ours, from my perspective, is relationship driven.
Mm.
And you need to inspire confidence. And you need to build relationships. It occupies half my time.
So let me ask you this, because you brought up how it feels for most people the first time that they engage with a lawyer, and it's never really for good things. This is kind of why I was put off studying law. I was put off going into the legal profession. Not that I mean, my sister's an advocate. There's plenty of my family and friends who are involved in it, and I made lifelong friends while studying law who are still some of the smartest people I know. But when you go to see a lawyer, it occurred to me while I was studying, it's never because you got great news, your daughter just got her distinctions at varsity, you're having a party, you're celebrating major victories. You usually go to a lawyer when you're in the shtuch, when there's something gone wrong in a contract, you're getting a divorce, there's been a horrible accident, something's gone wrong in your, you know, kind of planning. That's when you need the lawyer. So it's almost as if there's this shadow that follows the idea of a lawyer around in people's heads.
So, of course, you're right. It isn't the law today is big business. We have structured our firm around what we call, and I can talk about Worksmans, matters that matter.
Okay.
From my perspective, what you are talking about is the run-of-the-mill person.
Sure.
Who is getting divorced, who has an accident, who has a claim because someone didn't pay an amount of money.
Right.
Those are real matters, and they're critically important to the people who are the victims of the kind of event you've just articulated.
Right.
The truth is that we've built our business on business. So if you look at a Worksmans, we're a corporate law firm. We're a business law firm.
And yes, that can be exciting. I mean, then you're dealing with mergers, acquisitions, takeovers,
correct,
listings,
and failings of business.
Mm.
I mean, everyone knows the big story of the last 6 weeks is Steinhoff.
Steinhoff, yeah.
We have been retained by Steinhoff to represent the executive management of that company.
Wow.
That is amazing. Why? Because we're dealing with problems all around the world, and we are attempting to save a assisting in attempting to save a corporation from the machinations of the past. And if we succeed, thousands of jobs will be saved. That's constructive and fantastic. But equally, and I say this...
And some real value might be pulled out of those balance sheets after all.
Let me say, I mean, the South African businesses are incredibly successful. They are worth tens of billions of rand, and they should be saved for that reason. The problem is when you're part of a group and the issues arise around the world, then that may not be as easy. But go ahead.
Isn't it great to be involved in something that has such international importance? Because this really is that people are talking about it like it's the Enron or the Goldman Sachs situation for South Africa.
And
right?
Correctly.
Yeah.
I think that description is spot on. So to be in, I've always run our practice on the basis that if it matters to you, then we will deal with it. We do not do the run-of-the-mill work simply because that isn't our playing ground. These kind of matters are fantastic. They excite us. But they're not all monetarily related. I mentioned earlier, your studio a couple of weeks ago with a couple of my partners and associates.
Yes.
Who were chatting about work we do in other spheres.
Yeah, that was on the Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg.
Quite right. Yeah. Now, that matter was a massive matter run by our pro bono team. But I would like to tell you a story.
Sure.
Some of the most fascinating matters that we have run are matters where we do on a pro bono basis. It's every South African loves sport.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a thing. It should be in your DNA.
Right.
Several years ago, we represented Ludwig Mamabolo, who was the first South African winner of the Comrades Marathon since the days of Bruce Fordyce.
Right. What was it? What was it about?
He was tested allegedly for having performance-enhancing substances, prohibited substances.
Sure.
And it told me a story about people, which, you know, if we all look as South Africans at the bad.
Yeah.
And we highlight it. It's sad. In that matter, he came to see us and he assured us that he had taken nothing. And I believed him. I'm not very good at lots of things, but people I understand. And I had no doubt he was telling the truth. And we tested everything that he had taken in the South African Institute's own laboratories was all clean. And we worked out that it was clear that the process, without getting into the specifics, the process of testing him post the event was wrong. I then went out and I found the best legal team, not only attorneys within my firm, but advocates, including, for example, the senior counsel who had acted for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission itself. And everyone wanted to be part of this matter on a no-cost charge basis. We ran the matter. It was brilliantly run. Not from a worksman's perspective, but the commission who sat and who we appeared before. And then we went around the world and we asked experts to advise us. Unbelievable. And they all did. And he was acquitted. And in fact, if you come to our offices today, in other words, the finding was set aside. On our wall in our building, Prada Place, is the gold medal that he won, which he gave to us with a note.
Oh, wow.
Just so we know, it's a small one. You get a big and a small.
Sure.
But the point is, he's a friend of our firm forever, and it's a matter that probably gave us a greater sense of accomplishment than the mega deals we do or the substantial awards we secure. And that is, I think, the big differentiator within our firm. But it does lead me, and I am changing topics slightly, just to the perception of lawyers, which is the question that you've asked.
That's where we started.
So let's start when me and you, you're younger than me, but when we were growing up. If you mentioned law,
yeah,
then people would say to you, I've got a joke. I've got a lawyer joke.
Right.
There were many.
Which, by the way, is not the worst place to start.
No. But let's think, just pause and think. Do you hear that today? You actually don't. There are three, and without politicizing this chat, there are three legs of any constitutional democracy. And let's look at it in the South African context just for a second.
Are you talking about the three branches of government?
Yeah, the three branches.
So the executive, the judiciary, and the legislature.
Right. So let's deal with the first and the last.
Mm-hmm.
The executive and the legislature. They haven't covered themselves in glory. I think that we can accept that, the two of us.
Yeah, to say the least.
Okay,
sure.
To say the least.
You'll find no argument here.
And you won't find any argument within the country.
No.
That is stating an incontrovertible fact.
Right.
And I think that the two of us can agree.
Sure.
The one branch that has stood firm and that has covered itself in absolute glory. You haven't read an article which says, here is a judge that, yes, you may get political parties saying it for their own nefarious purposes, but the fact is...
Those same parties, by the way, have no problem when the verdict is in their favor.
Absolutely, and they are in their favor and against. But it's with a sense of pride that we can say that what branch has kept this country on an even keel? I'm going to tell you, within the three you've mentioned, plus one which I'll get to, which isn't a branch, the judiciary has.
Yes, they've upheld the Constitution.
They have been amazing.
Yeah.
And I must tell you that it's with a sense of unbelievable pride that I'm part of that branch.
Because you are an officer of the court.
Correct.
That's what lawyers are.
Well, you have three duties. Right. One is to the court.
Yeah.
One is to your client. And one is actually to the other side, which many people forget.
That's a very good
point.
But
you know
what?
So if we back, I sit and I say that judges, yes, in every jurisdiction around the world, you've got good judges, you've got bad judges. But I'll tell you this, that in the main, they are exceptional. And without a single incident that me and you can pick on, judges have been nothing short of magnificent, as of the lawyers who have fought cases to uphold the Constitution.
And where they've erred, it's just because they're human.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not because they're judges.
100%. Sure. So I think that's the first. The other area which is squarely where you chose to play, and that is your media, mm-hmm. if I can call it under the broad rubric.
The Fourth Estate, yeah.
And I think they've been equally magnificent. So the answer is, I might have issues with the manner of reporting and the accuracy, which in very, very often leaves a lot to be desired. Difficult for me to say it because some of our cornerstone clients are the media empires that control this country.
Sure.
But that having been said, I find it, we can both, I would like to think, hold our heads high, because what has happened here, without fear or favor, is that we have kept government on an even keel, and I think that is sensationally good.
And sometimes we've even been able to hold them to account, which is something that in most constitutional democracies, even more evolved ones than ours, they very seldom get right.
Well, look at things are happening today.
Yeah.
Every day we're looking to see the country last year. I can only talk from the perspective of my limited environment. But if I look beyond it to the people who are your friends and mine, there was a concern. Mm. And we've hit the ground running this year. I get a sense there's a sense of optimism.
Absolutely.
Cautious, yes, but optimism.
I love these conversations. You see, I mean, I could talk to you about law because it is fascinating. And I could talk to you about the fact that you're at this firm and you're at the head of a firm which is 100 years old. And we could talk about reputational stuff and we could talk about the areas of specialization. I do want to get into some of that because that's where you are the expert. That's where you and your firm are the most credible that you can be, and that's why people come to you. But I love these discussions around the greater role all of us have to play in society. And I think in South Africa, we do have a very powerful legal fraternity. Even though there's a bit of healthy competition between the big firms, it seems to me that it's the big five, really, that have done an enormously useful, positive, constructive deal of work in getting South Africa's law made clearer, whether it's in terms of helping us to understand things like criminal law, which we may not have understood before some high-profile cases not so long ago, whether it's understanding the role of the Constitution in all of our lives and how important that is, whether it's basic things like, for some people, it's about service delivery and what government has to do. These are things that I feel that we don't often sit back and give credit where credit's due. It's not the judiciary. They're the arbiters. But it's how well those cases are put forward by the lawyers. That's what you pay a lawyer for. You pay them to give the best possible representation of your situation before a judge. And I think that that's where firms like Worksmans have done a terrific job.
Look, I mean, I could list the cases we've been in, but you're spot on. It's not just us.
Yeah.
Obviously, we carry, together with the four other major firms that dominate the legal landscape in this country. We do. We carry a disproportional burden, but that's a role, that is our giving back. Obviously, clients fall into two categories. There are a number of matters, in fact, going on at the moment, where we act for large corporates in enforcing their rights, so that's different. But you have a number of bodies, you know them, Freedom Under the Law is one, the Helen Suzman Foundation is another, that are out there that are funded in order to hold, I want to say, institutions and individuals to account. And I stand proudly alongside my colleagues.
Do you find that difficult sometimes? Because it's all good and well when, you know, you feel that you're standing up for freedom, democracy, freedom of speech, the rule, equal application of the law on all people. But sometimes it isn't so clear. And sometimes when you decide to represent some of these clients, some of these NGOs, some of these corporates, you get a backlash either from the public or from political parties or from individual politicians. And sometimes they're not so nice.
I think there's a change. So let me say this. You are correct. And Gareth, let's pause and let me tell you the change that's occurred within our environment.
Okay.
And the change is one of association. There was a time when, provided that the individual organization you were representing had a cause that you could argue for legally, you would represent them. I was going to say between the two of us, but perhaps there are one or two other people listening. It's changed. The reality is that there is a zero tolerance if you align yourself with organizations and individuals who are, if I can use the term, tainted.
Right.
If I was to say otherwise, it would be incorrect. We are all, this know your client scenario has extended to what they stand for.
Right.
And what happens is if you represent the wrong person, and by wrong, I mean the people we understand that are tainted by corruption or the like.
Even people who are perceived to be
dodgy.
Let
me tell you, I'm going to answer that because there's a subtle change. But if you represent them, then other clients won't align themselves with you. Now, that is easy when you're talking about the individuals who we all know are corrupt and tainted because they're in the newspaper or on your program in the media every day.
Mm.
Those are the easy. Let me tell you the more difficult. The more difficult is if you've got a multinational which has a branch office. The question is, you do the multinational's work, but a branch steps out of line. What do you do?
KPMG, for example.
Yeah, KPMG, for example. Now, the reality is, do you taint? The question is the taint pervasive through the entire organization? If it is, it's an easy call. If it isn't, and the organization acts incisively, then it's an easy call. But when it's between the two, it's more difficult.
But David, this is where, as the chairman of a major law firm, I would imagine a lot of your time and effort and sleepless nights go into, because it's not that easy. If you decide that someone approaches you and they say, listen, I've been unfairly smeared, I've been drawn into something that isn't my fault, it isn't my responsibility, I'm clean and I need you to help me, but you know helping them is going to make you look either very, very dodgy yourselves, or that they're going to say, well, he's brave to take that on because no one else wants to. I wouldn't touch them.
Yeah, so I'm not going to give you the politically, for want of a better expression, correct answer.
Good.
I'm going to give you the truth.
Okay.
And I can only give it from our perspective. We live in an environment where you hear the expression, and it's correct, that you're innocent until proven guilty. For high-profile individuals who approach us articulating precisely what you just have, the answer is, unfortunately for them, more often than not, come back to us when you are clean. And the simple reason is that there is such a pervasive animosity for people who are perceived to have contributed towards the devastation which has affected every sector of our economy, that there is an intolerance level that you simply don't have that choice. Now, it's often not as clear as that, but there are individuals and there are organizations that we have said it would taint us, rightly or wrongly, immeasurably, and we have a choice.
And sometimes you turn away big money when you do that, right?
We do indeed. You'll often find that the beneficiaries of conduct, which you and I would find morally reprehensible, are beneficiaries of huge amounts of money and will pay anything. Because if you brief a firm like Worksmans, it automatically carries a credibility. Sure. And so, but the reality is, we've had clients say to us, we're telling you right now, if we are not comfortable with who you represent, we will dissociate ourselves from you.
So then do you get blowback over Steinhoff, for example?
No, because the reality is that we are, our separation is we are not representing the individuals who have been highlighted as having been the protagonists of the unlawful conduct. So that is our call. So we are acting for the new guys on the block that have inherited the nightmare and are cleaning
it. And as you said, for all those people who are trying to hold on to their jobs.
And that's it. So our motivation is absolutely fine. We've said, and in fact, the company's attitude is to go forward. You can't. Yes, it's interesting, but diverse. Institutional knowledge is a critical component.
Mm.
There is a fine line between having institutional knowledge and sweeping away the past. Not every single person who was involved with the organization was complicit within what occurred there. And that is yet to emerge.
Sure.
We're not even at day one in that Absolutely. Particular process. But from our perspective, it's an easy call. We are lucky. There are more difficult examples that I encounter every day. So you're absolutely right. I spent a ridiculous amount of my time making calls about who to represent. And the answer is never a financial one. The answer is we're running a business. We have spent, as you pointed out, 100 years building a brand. And let's look, you mentioned KPMG. How quickly can an organization, and they are an amazing multinational accounting firm.
Hmm.
To what degree we can debate, but they have been affected by the conduct of a few.
Yeah.
Now, one would say, well, how pervasive was it? Except, I don't have to debate that. I don't know. We're not involved in that particular matter. But I'll say this to you. You've got to do everything you can to protect your business.
Let me ask you then, I mean, because I'll get into more of what the chairman actually does. Because a lot of people think, oh, well, you just have to attend one or two board meetings. I mean, your work there is a day-to-day thing. But if Atul Gupta had to come to you, let's say hypothetically he said to you, listen, I've been unfairly and wrongfully accused by all of these State Departments. All of these many, many charges that have been mentioned in the media are all erroneous. It's unfair. I feel like there's massive reputational damage. I can't run my business anymore. I feel I've made a huge positive contribution to South Africa. Will you represent me? You say, Mr. Atul Gupta, in your letter, I'm terribly sorry, or let's talk.
I'm terribly sorry. Because what you've given me is the easiest example.
Right.
In fact, I probably wouldn't write back. So, but that's an easy call. I mean, it is. And I can say this, and I don't want to talk for the other majors, but I would be blown away if any of my peers would act any differently. In fact, they won't. It's a 1-second discussion.
and government in general, because here things get a little bit gray.
Mm.
So this administration, you said yourself, and I agree with you completely, hasn't covered itself in glory. The executive has not done a terrific job of looking after the rights of its citizens, making sure that things happen in this country. They've almost done the exact opposite with volition. Now, if certain people in government approached you and said, look, we need you to represent the Department of Basic Education, you'd have to weigh that up on its merits?
Absolutely. I don't think that one would. There are a number of parastatals we've represented for decades. They are brilliantly run. The individuals we deal with are above reproach. And so that's an easy call. We've also run, probably, I mean, we'll get to it, one of the fastest growing practice groups within our business is something colloquially referred to as investigations.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not hard to understand why.
Sure.
So there we investigate, provided we do so without interference. So
who would you have in that department? I mean, this isn't just lawyers. This, you're now a law firm with a department of other specialists.
Yeah, so
operating in, under your aegis.
So let's just diversify this discussion a bit. What you, there are law firms that think the way forward is to have a multidisciplinary offering. So you would have investigators, you would have forensic experts, you would have accountants, auditors, etc. And they would, because when there is a wholesale fraud or a dishonest act that requires investigation, or a contract concluded which has unlawful aspects to it, whether bribery, corruption, or the like, it makes sense to have that all under one roof. We don't do that.
Okay.
So what we do is we subcontract the individuals whose expertise we will require. The entire team is headed and run by lawyers, and that's how we run our practice. Others do precisely what you've said. Mm. They will employ within a different, let's call it within a subsidiary of that firm, accountants or investigators, as the case may be. We don't. We subcontracted. We are, with I think one exception within our entire firm, Worksmans is constituted at a professional level by attorneys. So that's what we do. And I'm proud to say the matters we've run have delivered some of the most incisive reports from an investigation perspective that has saved this country billions. Why? Because we've looked at contracts and we've told the parastatal, great news for you, don't pay this amount, don't honor that contract, etc., etc. That's great work to do, because there's always so much money involved. And the and to be fair, what we uncover, and it takes time and costs money, but the upside for this country is so huge, and that's some of the greatest work we're doing at the moment.
How do you, in a situation like that, would you be paid a standard kind of rate, or would you quote up front, or would you do it in contingency? How does it usually work?
No. So the whole concept, dealing with the third, we don't really do contingency work ever.
Okay.
We don't do it because matters are never simple. The day I met you and you said, do it on contingency, and I said, well, this is a great matter because we can take 30% of the upside, and you can only do so in limited respects. But the fact is, it sounds attractive until 10 years later, we're still having the fight.
Yeah.
That is the problem. The way we do it is we deal with it on an hourly basis. You can terminate our mandate whenever you want.
Right.
And we run the matter to completion. We obviously give an indication, but the problem with these things, and you'll appreciate this straight away, criminal conduct has a number of tentacles and they spread. So it's not like saying, I sat down with you, we concluded an agreement, mm-hmm. you breached the agreement, I want my money. That's easy, because you'll give evidence, the other counterparty, and that's crisp. These kind of things, there are, I mean, I've walked into boardrooms where there are pieces of paper stuck to the wall and the little arrows, the so-called spider diagrams, you actually can't follow it. So nefarious is the conduct of the individuals who perpetrate these kind
so
of things.
So complicated.
And complicated. Yeah. And so...
What's that old line of what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive?
Correct. So I think that certainly from our perspective, we deal with it on that basis. Interestingly, it's the perfect matter for any lawyer. I'm giving away a secret here.
All right.
But it's when the fees become secondary. Because the matters in issue are so important. That's the foundation stone of what we do. That is why we don't do the matter where someone has insulted you and you want to sue for defamation or there's a claim for 10,000
rand. Yeah, but you also don't want to do that because the quantum's too small.
Correct. And why? Because for us, we run a business.
Sure.
We run a business, and if it doesn't make commercial sense to us, it's never going to make commercial sense to you. So I'd rather keep you as my friend forever. Then have a matter where you say, but I don't understand it. I was suing for 100,000 rand and we're now at 400,000 rand in legal costs. Never will we do that. So we run a business and we look at the business case and we do it with you and we make sure we make the right decisions.
So how much of your time as the chairman then is spent on figuring out where you've got to chase business? Because obviously there's competition. There are certain clients that you really want to hold on to, and there are certain clients that you'd be happy to let slide. And there's rands and cents decisions there that are very much the kinds of decisions that any CEO of a major company would make in terms of revenue and costs and all the rest of it. And how much of it is this reputational stuff, this slightly more numinous effect of these are the pro bono situations we'd like our reputation to be built in. These are the sorts of clients that we want association with. These are the kind of NGOs that we believe will bring about real change that we want to put our muscle into to help achieve great things that will safeguard constitutional democracy and that kind of thing. How do you split up that time?
So when I was asked to stand for the chairman or to become chairman of the firm, I was younger. So I've now been in that position for 3 years, seems like 30. The response to the first question I gave, which was, are you still going to practice law? Strange thing after nearly 30 years, but I was still going to practice. The answer was an unequivocal yes, because I said the term is finite and I cannot become a burden to my partners after the term expires. So, and also I love what I do, so it was a mix. I said, in answer, I worked out best laid plans, etc. But I worked out exactly how my time would split. So I said, half my time I will continue to run the matters I run. I have incredible lawyers that are part of various teams that I head. And so really I perform a more strategic role in deciding what to do and not do. But I said I was most definitely not going to step away. So that was half the time. I said, the other half of my time, I would deal with clients. We do not let any clients slide. The reality is the client that is worth 100,000 rand in fees to you this year could be 10 million rand in fees tomorrow. So that's just silly. It takes a lifetime to build a reputation and as long to build a relationship. The relationship, people think we're not a pick and pay or a checkers. The reality is that people come to us because they trust us and because we've spent decades building real relationships.
And the reality is that for each of those clients, that's their most important case.
100%.
Right there and then.
Correct.
Even though you guys are doing 100 different cases in a week.
Correct.
This is for them the most important thing they've ever done.
100%. Yeah. I'll get to slight differentials we have. But anyway, so... I figured half my time would be on relationship building, and we've done it amazingly. I forgot, unfortunately, because you may think I'm perfect, I'm not, but I forgot about the management aspect of the firm you're referring to. And all it meant was I had to extend my day to deal with the internal issues because we've got more than 100 ATAR personalities, each of which thinks correctly that they're indispensable.
Yeah.
And you have to manage those, although my partners are actually a pleasure, generally speaking. But that having been said, I didn't take that into account. So it was a longer day. But the thing I enjoy most is people. I love people.
So you're glad you took the job?
Yeah, right? I've loved it because I meet fascinating people every single day. And you want to know something? It's to build relationships is easy for me, because you know, once you've done that, they'll fight for you. And when your clients become ambassadors, then I don't need to worry about half 50% of my time. And many of them are. They want you to be successful. It doesn't matter what you do, and it doesn't matter the sector. The people who are great just stand out because they're a rare commodity.
So you mentioned you've moved into this new building, and you mentioned how you guys deal with clients that makes you different. Explain that to me. How's your building configured? Because you could work off a blank slate here. And it's nice to have been the chairman under this particular time and place in the firm's evolution, because now you have an opportunity with some money in the bank and so on to be able to change the way that you practice law and the way that your clients come in and on board and how you treat them and where you take them and how you make the conversations productive and constructive. Tell me about that, because you've put a lot of thought into this.
I want you to come and see. I know you can't articulate necessarily what you will see visually.
Explain to me what to look for.
Okay. It's something that I am, and so is each member of the family. And I use that term because if you had to say to me, what have I tried to do? I'm going to answer your building question in a second. I haven't forgotten.
Sure.
But the one thing that I have tried to inculcate in our firm is a sense of family. The youngsters who join us as candidate attorneys every year, in my day or your day, they would have been called article clerks. Now they're candidate attorneys, said that the big differentiator was they felt a sense of belonging from the second that they walked through our doors.
Because it's horrible to be an article clerk. I mean, just explain to anyone who doesn't know, because there are a lot of people who aren't lawyers who are listening to this. That's the grunt work. That's having to file stuff, having to run back and forward from court with papers, having to paginate things. I mean, it's boring, right?
It's all the right terminology. Look,
I'm being cruel because there's a lot of interesting
stuff.
There
is absolutely, and it depends.
You're constantly absorbing information. You work with these brilliant people.
Yeah, well, that's the key. You just hit the nail on the head. What we try to do is that, firstly, so we create a sense of family where everyone has a role to play. Mm-hmm. And everyone is recognized for what they do regardless. And we recognize them in amazing ways internally. But we've really built this family, the sense of belonging.
Right.
I know that it's a fine balancing act between coldly running a business and running a family business. But we have focused on the latter. There is no barrier to entry. I don't mind who the individual is. If they have something which is either concerning to them, or which is constructive, I prefer the latter.
Yeah.
They can walk straight into my office, and I acknowledge the roles that they play, and that's the way it is.
So they're not walking around, and when they see you, they go, oh, shit, there's the chairman.
No, they try. They can try that once. We had our opening for our new CAs yesterday, and I said to them, you know, Mr. Hertz is my father.
Okay.
Sir, I don't know who that is. Everyone calls me David. And that's something I think that I encourage throughout the firm. So if you break down the barriers, everyone is encouraged to articulate and to be passionate and succeed.
But David, that goes against the flow in law.
Because yes, it does.
In law, there's a lot of my lord and senior counsel and, counsel and chairman, and there's a lot of that rank, and you know, it comes into it. The
not
legal profession. It's
not within our environment. You know, there was a most wonderful attorney who's no longer with us. His name is Joe Rabinowitz.
Yes.
I always say that in every generation there's an icon, and I'm talking legally. He was an icon, and I had just arrived. Well, I'd arrived at Worksman's and I'd just been admitted. And I had a matter and he was on the other side. And he called me and said, David, please call me Joe. Can we just chat about how we're going to run this particular matter? And what are your thoughts? And it was the most humbling experience of my entire life.
Because he had this reputation.
No, and deservedly.
Yeah, yeah.
So there he was guiding me.
Treating
him
as
a
real colleague.
And an equal. And I was a little baby.
Yeah.
And he had achieved everything in this industry and more. And humility is a great attribute, particularly when you've earned the right not to be. and he was just he was a doyen. And I've tried to inculcate that in the firm. So that is a massive differentiator. It is something which, quite frankly, I'm completely intolerant about people in perceived positions of, I say, power, treating those that aren't in a manner that you wouldn't like to be.
But you have a lot of star lawyers. I mean, we do. You have some superstar lawyers.
Yeah, and I must tell you, almost without exception, obviously.
Yeah, but you mentioned all these A-type personalities, so it's like herding cats some of the time, right?
It is, but the reality is they behave as I'd expect them to,
but there's healthy great competition there too. I mean, there's like, you know, one guy will say, ah, I've won this many matters for the firm this year.
I secured this instruction.
Correct.
And that's right. We are a meritocracy.
Right.
And it's a balancing act. I think we've achieved it. The reality is that it doesn't change the sense of belonging and family. I'll tell you how I measure it. It's interesting. I'm going to talk about it at partner level. I'm going to come back to the building. So,
I'll remind you.
Please do so.
Partner level.
There's change that occurs in every industry. People call it disruptions. Within the legal industry, changes are huge. They're technologically based. You know, do we need lawyers? We can press a button. It's a topic for another day. We've got to continually adapt. Mm-hmm. But at partner level, there's been an influx of international law firms. They use South Africa as a base, so they can say they've got a foothold.
Right.
And generally, they're small. But they are part of major international alliances and networks. And they come here and they can often throw money around because when I last looked, the rand isn't as strong as the dollar or the pound, certainly not in my world.
Yeah. So you're spending much less.
Correct. So they can come, spend much less and attract real talent. And in consequence, I'm going to say six, because it has dropped. You spot on. There are five major firms today. I don't want to get shouted at by my friends at smaller firms. They're brilliant lawyers across the board.
And some of them have super specialized.
Absolutely right. So all of that is correct. But amongst what was then the top six, we worked out that about 200 partners or directors, same thing, had left to go elsewhere, either to other law firms, and by that I mean existing, or to new firms that were opening up, or they were leaving the profession and going into business. It didn't really matter. In all the time that we had, it was a 2 or 3 year period, there were two partners that had left us. One was a retirement issue, and one was a lack of, she'd been brought in at the request of a client who didn't support her, so it didn't work for her. But the reality is we have remained remarkably stable.
You don't have a huge turnover of staff in retrospect, partners.
At partner level, we
that's incredible.
Look, we don't have a high turnover anywhere, but at partner level particularly, that's the greatest success of our firm. Not to lose people and to attract the best out there. So if, for example, we sense that we need to bolster this area, the ability to attract the best of the best from elsewhere is also an accolade, but a recognition you're doing things right. So that's the Worksman's Way.
So that's how that's two ways that you measure.
Correct.
It. Now, tell me about the building and how that plays into it.
So if you go into Sandton and you drive around, what will you see? You will see these huge new buildings. Let's just put aside Sasol and Discovery, which are monoliths. I mean, what they have built, and they're certainly from a Discovery point of view. These are billion-dollar businesses that have achieved remarkable success.
Yeah, deservedly.
And deservedly. So here you see these new buildings, and if you had to take sector by sector, law firms, your major law firms are all in these shiny new offices.
Yeah, all of them have suddenly been buying new offices.
No one is buying.
Okay, building.
But
hang on. Is that because if one does, all the others have to?
I think that's exactly what it is. So,
otherwise they're going to look like the Nochschlepp.
Yeah, so the truth is there's a positive and negative. Let me give you the negative. You move to a new building and the client's like, what's it going to cost me? And that's the negative. But the reality is that we'd been in our building for 17 years.
Yeah.
It was already an existing structure. All our peers had moved or were moving. And it was time. We couldn't live on a building site. We had to move. And so once we'd made that call, we made the call. It was also the right time. The Sandton market, and you know this better than most, has in excess of 1 million square meters of empty space. It's frightening. So all of these buildings that firms like ours and companies have left. So Discovery's moved from Sandton to Sandton.
Isn't it also because you've expanded?
Yes, but our model isn't to. So yes, we've grown, but to grow exponentially in these economic times is just commercial idiocy. So we've worked out that the right model is ours in terms of size. We like where we are. If down the line we have a massive spurt economically, then people might say, David, you're an idiot. You never predicted it. But it's fine. We've been okay to date. So now we decided we had to move. We wanted to be visible. That was important.
Sure.
One of the sites to us that we were offered stood out above all the rest because it's directly across the road from Sandton. So it goes, if you look at the row, starting with Discovery, it's that row. So it starts with Discovery. Right. Then there's, I'm not sure, there's some structure being put up. Then there's us. Then there's Ernst & Young. And so it runs. But we wanted to be on that main drag around the Gautrain. For us, that was critically important, and it was a perfect site. We were then offered at inception a building which was like the others. I'm not disparaging them. Other buildings are beautiful. But it was this glass monolith. And we said, on advice, there's an individual who designed the building and furnished it. He's a genius. This is not an advertising campaign for him. But he was spectacularly good. What happened was he came to us and said exactly what you did. He said to us, guys, he had been involved with our business in Parktown, which is where we used to be, and then in our building in Sandton. And he said, your 100 years means something. You cannot forget the past.
Yeah.
And so what I'm going to do is build for you, or suggest we build, a structure that recognizes the history and the future. So if you come and look at our building, that's why I want you to come and see it. The ground floor looks like an old courthouse. You've got the cladding, which I'll say is granite to you, but in fact it's limestone, I think. But you've got this cladding on the ground, which is exactly that, and you've got the structure which comes out from from your so-called base into the sky, which is our future. So there's a meaning behind the building, which is different. There's no building in Sandton that looks like that. And so that's what we did. Our entire representation to the market is recognize and acknowledge and respect the past, but look towards the future. And that's our building. If you come past and see it, you'll see it's exactly that. So that's the base. You come in off the street. Sandton's a walking precinct. And on the ground floor, we have a rotating art gallery. Now that is art where we will present as a give back to the, really, as what we're going to call ourselves, a patron of the arts, but we're going to give an opportunity, I think it's going to be brilliant, to the youngsters of the country, and we have such incredible talent in that sphere, an opportunity through the major galleries to come and present their art, because more and more people walk to our building.
Right.
And as they come in, suddenly there's this ground floor revolving art gallery. And what we will do is, it's not ours, the art's over a single piece. But the majority of the artworks on the ground floor will be brought in and they will change. And so members of the public can come and see. Now you should say to me, if you were being probing and incisive, how much is Worksman's earning? And the answer is, we're earning nothing. It gives our clients what we will create, which is really a client experience.
But this is a very welcoming environment.
It is. So it's that. So they walk
in. Even if it was costing you something.
Yeah, but it isn't. And what the galleries will do is we still need to do this, but they will give towards a trust, which we will then promote young artists. And in this country, and they are so talented.
So why particularly art? I mean, you could have chosen any number of other interesting things to showcase the brilliance of South Africa.
Sorry, just so you know, it happens to be a rotating art gallery. Art is in the eye of the beholder.
Okay.
And I don't mind what we showcase.
Sure.
So if someone comes and says, this is what we think would be fascinating, we'll do that. Okay. But basically, it gives us an ability to showcase. It's fascinating for our clients who love it. And also to give something back. We've always been known for our art. So we've gone and we have changed, and you'll understand this immediately, from what was Eurocentric. Art 25 years ago was very European-based. Sure. And so what we've done is we've gone out and we have brought in what I believe is probably one of the great, certainly amongst the law firms, probably the greatest selection of new South African art that exists. And it's purely to showcase, but that's ours. So suddenly we've got areas where you can work, areas where you need to see it. But what I'm trying to achieve with the team is that when you arrive and you're half an hour early, because you, just like I came to you today, I was sure of the traffic,
yeah,
I will give you an experience which will take away that concern that you may have about being in this environment which is uncertain or whatever
the case is. And if you're in a very sterile place where there's not a lot of color or interest or fascination or texture or any of that stuff that art can bring in, it adds to your paranoia.
Correct.
It makes you even more insecure because you think, oh my God, this is like a doctor's surgery. It's like that smell of hospitals. You get even more nervous, right?
Correct.
If it looks like the kind of place, well, this is welcoming, this is friendly. And you say people can walk off the street and see this stuff.
Absolutely. And why? Because I want them.
Now, who would have thought you could walk into a law firm and look at the art?
That's exactly different.
It's very different.
It is. So that's where it is, and that's what we do. And if I can achieve, and if Worksmans can become known as a patron, but an environment which is warm and welcoming and easy, then people will want to be there. And that's the key for us, provided we deliver a quality service, etc.
I'm also very interested. I mean, there's so much we could talk about this morning, and maybe we need to do another one of these, because I'm interested in candidate attorneys. I'm interested in how you select them. I mean, there may be an overflow in terms of how many good law students we're producing in South Africa. But there aren't that many places for them to go and become candidate attorneys. And firms like yours can afford to be very selective about who you bring in. And you don't want a high turnover of staff. So if they come in with you, you're looking at it long term often. And you're looking for people with specific talents, maybe even specific personalities, rather than just good academic results. How do you choose those people? And you as chairman must have some say in that, because I imagine that you and the other directors, partners, sit around and you determine the strategy going forward.
Okay, so I'm not going to talk law first. I'm going to talk generally speaking.
Okay.
Today's the board exam for accountants. I happen to know I have a daughter writing.
Right.
There are, according to her, 3,000 youngsters who have completed their degrees. This is Bachelor of Accounting Science to BCAs, right, and they're now sitting for their board exam. Let me guarantee you this, that there is not space amongst the accounting firms who take on far more candidates than law firms do. And you'll know it better than I do, but there was also an issue with placement of doctors.
Yeah.
That had studied for 5 years and now needed to go do
practicals
or whatever it is, housemanship, I'm not sure what they call it, for two, and suddenly they couldn't be placed, which means that there's a qualification issue. So it is a problem in that within every, and I'm going to call it professional sector, where universities are producing thousands of candidates, they are doing so in circumstances where many won't be able to practice the profession or whatever it is that they've studied for. That is devastating to me.
Yeah.
The answer is in terms of what do we look for, and then am I involved in the process? Let me do the second first. I'm not involved in the process of interviewing simply because we have every partner within our firm is expected to do more, and we have those who love engaging, interviewing, training, and there's a team of guys that go and they deal with that particular process. Interestingly, Worksman's was recently awarded the prize for the best graduate recruitment program in the country, and that is amongst the corporates as well, which I found fascinating. It wasn't just law firms. So we competed with every major corporate, so we obviously run a great program, which then encourages people to apply.
Okay, I'm glad that you aren't personally involved in those interviews and so on, because then you can speak about it on a more sort of theoretical basis with me. So there are all these candidate attorneys that you could choose from. How do you spot, how do your people spot talent? What are they looking for? Like, there could be a candidate attorney listening now and they go, I really want to work for that firm. What is it that they want?
So we are looking for people with personality. It's interesting. Yes, you have to achieve an academic threshold to be considered.
Sure.
If you don't, then you don't even pass the threshold of our firm. Once you do that, you need to be a particular kind of person to work within our environment. And we know, because this is not the first year we've done it. We've been doing it for 100. So we know the kind of people that will fit in. And fitting in is absolutely critical. So it is not only academic brilliance. In fact, that is, in our view, less important. But you've got to be academically strong. And ultimately, it's a personality-driven choice. And I actually was ignorant of the process, and I was a little upset because I said, how is it that as one of the five majors, if I look at the top 20 people who wrote the board exam in a year, only two of them came to Worksman's? And I said, I can't understand it. Everyone should want to come to us because I live in the world of that's the way it should be.
Sure.
There's a lack of objectivity in many things I do. So I said...
at least you're aware of it.
I am aware.
Which means that you're on the path to self-actualization.
Indeed I am. It's a long path, they tell me. But okay. So, and they came and said, David, you don't understand. The Worksman's way is very specific. You've got to fit in. You've got to have a personality. You've got to be outgoing. And they're not wrong for this reason. You go into a firm, you need advice. You want somebody who inspires a bit of confidence.
Sure.
If that is lacking, you, as brilliant as the
dead
person
in the water,
may be, that's a problem. So we look for that, and that's. But the truth is, I would anticipate we get 1,000 applicants a year. We interview probably 50. We take around 20.
Okay.
And we do it. Why the number? Because the way we work, which is different to other majors, is we make sure that every single candidate attorney is allocated directly to a partner director.
Okay.
And so we want
like
that interaction.
At the bar.
Yes. The answer is that we don't believe it's fair on these youngsters to have this gap between you and the director, where you've got to go to, for example, a first-year associate, and then a second-year associate, and then maybe a junior partner before you get to the person who's really going to impart their knowledge. So that's our model. So we limit the numbers that we take in. Back to your question.
Yeah.
It's a real, real problem. It's not a problem that the law firms who in the aggregate, and I'm being over-generous here, I would imagine that the top five probably take 200 candidate attorneys in every year in the aggregate. And if I'm wrong and it's 220 or 180 or two, enough. Now, that's not a problem because there are hundreds of law firms and people take in candidate attorneys and so they invariably can find places where they can work. I only approach it from the perspective of the majors, but I have little doubt that even after that whole process is complete, you still have hundreds of aspirant attorneys that cannot find a home, and that is disconcerting.
It
Do you want to know what I think the answer is?
What is it?
I think the answer is this. If we had an American system where every single person, and I'm talking obviously within the criminal system, and I'm telling you that there is, don't be shocked, there's criminality within South Africa. Can we accept that?
Yeah, of course. It's endemic.
It's endemic. And therefore, if you had public defenders and public prosecutors, and you took these youngsters in, And they used that as a training ground for running matters. What would happen
even
is
if
they
just
would
to
get,
learn the basics of litigation.
But they would, and they'd get involved. And in the States particularly, they are some of the most highly sought after people into the corporate world once they've got that background. Right. And there's a need.
And you have to be a general practitioner
Correct.
Before you can specialize.
I think that is...
That's a great way of solving
and
the problem.
And I think that would solve.
So, I mean, can't you and the other firms get together and try to get the Minister of Justice to understand this?
Yes, we can. There has to be, but let's, you know what, we're sitting on the cusp, and perhaps we're underpinned by hope.
Yes.
But we're sitting on the cusp of potential, of a paradigm shift in what has become the norm.
Yeah.
I've got to believe that. If that's the case, I think that ears are going to be opened to changes in every sector. It's starting to happen. And I can tell you there is an, the competition which exists is so ridiculously healthy that it's that amongst law firms today, this is not a collusive issue at all. There is a common desire to do good.
Yeah.
And so the door's open. The question is us getting together when there's a political will and making it happen. I think it could be exciting.
They'd struggle to ignore all five of you
if
you had a united purpose. Okay, but now I need to ask you something controversial. Women in law, and it has bearing on candidate attorneys, on partners, on judges, all of these things. So I know a lot of women who are in law, and they're all as competent, all of that. We don't need to go down that road. The question is there a predisposition – that makes men more apt to be competitive in the law? Is there, in your mind, something that we need to do institutionally that we're not already doing in terms of perhaps a system whereby women are advanced at a different pace to men? What do you think we can do to solve this problem? Because there are a lot of very competent women, and obviously there are a lot of women who've done as well as the average man might have done. So is there something in this that we're not understanding? And is it true that it appeals to a certain kind of woman? You know, why do we drop these different sets of rules for men and women?
Okay. Thanks for telling me what you think the factual position is. I'm now going to tell you.
You tell me.
And it's a frightening answer. We make no allowance, nor do we judge. And I'm going to tell you why, because they would kill me.
Yes.
Men and women within our organization. There's no debate that over the last decade, and I can only talk about Worksmans, women have outperformed men exponentially. I, on occasion, lecture to the young candidates that come through on certain topics when they allow me to. They're not sure of my legal acumen in the firm. But when I'm asked to chat to them, I recall walking in often to lectures where our candidates' attorneys are there and being confronted by 15 women, no men.
Right.
I don't know the reason why. Maybe law wasn't attractive to men at a point in time. But I would say, and I'll run the numbers and let you know, but I will guarantee you that over the last decade, our intake of men versus women is 80% women, 20% men.
Wow.
So we're clear, we haven't done it because we are trying to address an imbalance of the past.
You're not putting a quota in place.
There's no quota.
This is just what's risen to the top.
Absolutely. So women are just infinitely better.
Listen. You said to me, I've told you what the facts are. I had a suspicion of this.
Yeah.
That's why I asked.
So that's the first. The second is that when we consider progression, there's no quota. You may get in on there is, as you've heard, employment equity targets, etc., within every firm. We address that in our hiring policy to address the imbalances of the past, and correctly so. But progression in our firm is on one criteria only.
Merit.
And that is merit. We don't care. So that is how we do it. And it's been brilliant for us. We won't dilute what we offer. It's simple. You walk in, you want a worksman's attorney, you'll get the best of the best. Otherwise, you won't get one. It's as simple as that. So that is what we do. And I can tell you that amongst the most successful partners in our firm are women. And the And obviously, as a consequence of our intake, they are coming through en masse, and it's and deservedly so. They're brilliant. So that is our experience. Historically, you are so right. When I joined the firm
a few years ago, women.
There were probably two or three. In fact, I was looking at photos of the partnership as constituted in 1981.
Yes.
There were 20, I counted, I think there were 20 partners of Worksmans. In 2018, there are about 115. So it is a growth in a relatively short space of time. There wasn't a woman in the photograph. I don't know the numbers quite now because I know we go there, but it is a material change. And every single year, the women coming through are, it's only. It's you, quite amazing to see.
And you've said, I have every reason to believe you, that the on merit, they're outperforming the men too. I mean, it's just incredible. And you don't have to jig the system or change the numbers. It's all going to happen naturally.
No, and if I didn't say that, they would kill me. So
well, exactly. You're afraid.
Yeah.
Well, you have nothing to be afraid about because on merit, you've got to being chairman. And I think that in a firm like that, that must feel like a hell of an accomplishment. But what's next for you? I mean, I can imagine there are a number of things on the table for you. You can go back to practicing ordinarily as a senior partner. You might even be a judge at some point. You might be interested in going into more particular business at some point.
Yeah. So for me, I have a number of years still left on my term. We'll chat next time. I haven't really applied. Let me say this. I love the environment.
Yeah. So you're clearly motivated by this.
Yeah. Can I say this? The one constant is change.
Yes.
And we have to keep changing. We've got to change to cater for the environment. We've got to change to offer our clients a better solution. We've got to change. I mentioned the environment that we are striving towards. We have to remain attractive to the youngsters because you want the best of the best in your hallways. And they excite me, the youngsters.
The energy, right?
They're great. So the answer is, and we've got to differentiate ourselves from everybody else. So what is our model? Perhaps that's the answer. I always say to people, because we've chosen not to have mega, that your five majors, interestingly, are measured by number of lawyers that work under a particular banner. And I'd look at it in a South African context, because that's where we practice.
Yeah.
As opposed to issues like profitability. We don't share our numbers with the market. Interestingly, in the UK, for example, they absolutely do. It's a marketing tool. They have something called Profit Per Equity Partner. Right. We don't do that. So I can't tell you how successful others are, but I'm sure everyone makes a living. The simple fact for me is our model was simple. I recognized that if you came to me on a commercial matter and you said, David, I need you to help me, and I walked in with eight lawyers, you'd have a heart attack. Not our model. So we give you the right people, focused teams, and that is our differentiator in this market. It has been, as you would imagine, incredibly well received by the market, who are smart.
Yeah.
Our guys are commercially astute. So that's where we are.
It feels to them like you're not wasting their money.
Absolutely. So that's our model, and that's where we go, and we keep trying to get the best of the best.
I want to know what would give you the happiness that, I mean, I'm not saying in any way that there's something missing from your life now, but you know, everybody has this this thing they still want to do that stops them from being complacent. And while I don't by any means infer that that's where you are, you said there's so much you still want to do. You've achieved great things. You must be the youngest chairman of the board among the five companies anyway. But would you like to be a judge? Would you like to actually be on the bench doing more of that transformational work?
No, I think that it's an amazing thing. My wife says to me, how can you love going to work every day? It's ridiculous. I love it. So I think probably what I would like to do is grow the youngsters on a more direct basis. I'd like to pick the next generation and work with them on a focused basis and grow them. I haven't done that because I haven't had the time. I've left that to the partners. I think that's exciting. I think if you want to know what I want to do, clearly we're moving in that direction. That I want to create, and I think we're better placed because of our size. Yes, we've got 100 partners and all of that. But if we can create the first truly demographically representative major law firm in this town, and we're on the way. The firm that does that will control this country, and for the right reasons. That is my aspirational goal, and I will drive that objective within our firm. If I can get there, that is, to me, that's the holy grail of the legal profession, and that's really where I want to go. And that's not a 1 year or 2 year or 3 years hence. That is a lifetime. That's a lifetime goal, and if I can get there, then I'll have achieved everything I want to.
David, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise.
It's great to actually sit down and discuss your business, and I hope that we'll have many more occasions like this, because I think when we get into the nitty-gritty of how these otherwise terrifying, enormous, monolithic law firms, how they actually work, it makes it a little bit more approachable for ordinary people.
Well, with the greatest of pleasure.
Thank you.
I'm up the road.
Thank you. We'll come and visit your gallery.
Look forward to it. Let me know.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Very good. CliffCentral.com.